Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer. Let's get growing.
Hey, everyone. Have you been to the Organic Gardener Podcast website and signed up for our email list? If you go there, you will get my new PDF, 7 Awesome Ways to Find More Time in Your Garden. And it's just some tips that I've learned from listening to my amazing guests who are always sharing with us super effective ways to be a better gardener. So if you head over to the organicgardenerpodcast.com and enter your email, you'll get 7 awesome ways to find more time in your garden. You can also get a copy of our ebook of Organic Gardening Basics. And just all the show notes are there, all the links to our shows. And of course, you'll get a special invitation to join the Organic Gardener Podcast Facebook community. Hope to see you there. Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast today. It's Wednesday, August 16th, and I'm super excited because it is my very last day of summer vacation. But I have 3 interviews today. One I already did and posted that you're going to love. And then I have another person on here. Well, my featured guest today is Mike Knox, who's from the White Harvest Seed Company. And he was just recommended to me like 2 days ago. So you haven't even heard the interview where he was recommended to me yet. And he's already on the phone with me. So welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, Jackie, it is great to be with you. It's a pleasure.
All right. Well, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a 53-year-old man that's married to a wonderful wife named Diane, and we run a business called White Harvest Seed Company out of the Ozarks of Missouri. And we've been gardening for many, many years for our family, and we felt the Lord leading us a few years back to start our own company, seed company, heirloom seed company, actually, and we went with it. And we've been doing it since 2010, had our own store, and my wife and I pretty much run it. And we go to expos throughout the United States, gardening and prepper expos, and just love talking about gardening and talking to folks and just helping them to learn more and us learn more from them even.
Oh, I love that. So I call my audience green future growers because, you know, they're very forward thinking, they're entrepreneurial, and just they're probably going to want to hear as much about how you started your business as what your business offers. And so, like, what you were gardening and you had a lot of heirloom seeds and people were asking for them, or like, how'd you get started with this?
Wow, good question. Well, just to be honest, I mean, my wife and I have been married 30 plus years, and we've gardened, you know, early on in our marriage and everything. And we lived up in Kansas City, Missouri area for quite a bit of our lives. She lived on a dairy farm. We lived on a 40-acre farm myself. And we met, of course. And through the years, we lived the normal, you know, suburbiite family aspect, you know, all electric house and all that type of stuff in a suburb. Up around Kansas City. And the Lord just led us he wanted us to go simple, to live simple. So we moved down here to South Missouri, like I said, in the Ozarks, and living as much off-grid as we can. The only thing we have that puts us on grid is our store and our cell phone, but we live with the solar, all-solar house. Have our own water supply with an Amish-made windmill that we helped erect, and we try to grow as much produce as we can, you know, and stuff for ourselves and our own food supply, but that's a labor of love. You know, we're still working on that, and through the years, we've gotten into the prepper side of things where we wanted to learn more about that, how to be more self-sufficient, in a sense, under God's control, and just have done more of those type of shows, the type of things with the lawn and garden things. And we're still working on, you know, I wish I'd started 20, 25, 30 years ago doing this lifestyle instead of waiting until I was, you know, 40, 45 or so, because it's a lot tougher to do that self-sufficient stuff as things go.
Oh, I love that. And, you know, a lot of my listeners are millennials, so I think you're going to inspire them to start now. So I do always kind of start the show out asking about your very first gardening experience. Like, were you a kid? Were you an adult? Like, who were you with? What did you grow? Like, what was your first experience in the garden?
I hated it. I was a 12-year-old. I was one of those guys, young kids that, you know, loved playing sports and doing that type of stuff. And my folks, I was the only child, which makes it another factor. But, you know, I was the one that had to go weed the garden and, asked to do that, or go bury kitchen scraps, you know, every day out in the garden for compost and stuff. And I literally hated gardening as a young kid. I mean, I loved eating the fresh produce, don't get me wrong, but I hated the work that went with it. So my first gardening experience from a seed company owner seems kind of ironic, but that was it.
Oh, are you kidding? My mom rolls her eyes every day. I'm sure she listens to my show and it's like, how did my daughter get a gardening show when she hated to garden? Of course, I don't do a lot of the gardening now either. My husband does most of it, but yeah, for sure. So then how did you learn how to garden organically? Like, did your parents do it that way? You were saying you put scraps out in the compost?
Well, my parents were at that, when we did, that was back in the 70s, early 80s, and they were, they were learning too at that point. They were subscribers to Mother Earth News magazine back then. Huh? And, so they did a lot of the things based on what Mother Earth News was teaching in those years. Through the years, as I gardened more and more, when we first started our gardens, I'd have to say I wasn't organic. But we are now, since we've been into the heirloom side of gardening. So it's more been self-educated, self-researching, reading, talking in all the shows that we go to on the lawn and garden side, talking to the old timers. There's a wealth of knowledge in the old timers. Unfortunately, my grandparents were super good at gardening, but it was at the time when I didn't care about gardening, so I wasted that resource. So I would strongly suggest, if you do have listeners that, have resources of older people that have a wealth of knowledge, boy, tap into that, because they have tremendous, tremendous experience.
Aw, I love that. So, do you want to tell us about something that grew well this year? Actually, wait, before I go there, I have to back up, because this is bugging me, and maybe it's bugging other people, but, like, what are some of these places that you go speak at? Like, what did you call it, prepper side of things, or...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the one aspect, we go to the lawn and garden shows, in the early winter, springtime, most big cities have a lawn and garden show where they, have vendors come in and they set up all the fancy sites to look at, the landscapes and stuff like that. So we go around to different ones that fit in. We don't go too much to the East Coast. We generally go south, as we went west a little bit. We've been to Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, Carolinas, we've been to Colorado, Kansas, Iowa, Illinois, Ohio. So, I mean, it just kind of varies where the shows are at that fit in to our distance that we can travel. The prepper side, the survivalist and preparedness seems to be a very popular aspect of things that people are interested in. We go there to sell, people to be able to provide their own food sources. And we talk to them there, in our seminars that we give, how to grow things, start things, how to save seeds, to the point that you can have a food source. If things go bad in the world, that you'll have something to, be able to feed your family with that year. So, that's something we do. I'm sure you'll give our website out later.
But go ahead and mention
it now. Go to our website.
Go ahead and tell people.
It's whiteharvestseed.com, www.whiteharvestseed.com, no spacing, no capitalized, and that'll take you to our website. And we have our link there, tells where we're at and going to be. Actually, that's why I was glad to get this in this day, is we're actually leaving to go and be in Arkansas at a show this weekend. So if anybody of your Arkansas listeners are there, we'll be in Conway, Arkansas this weekend.
Awesome. So, like, I guess so the people that go to these shows want to learn about seeds and gardening and vegetables and different things like that.
That's just one aspect. On the prepper side of things, you have to be concerned about not just your food sources, but what are you going to do if electricity goes out for 3 weeks, in a storm or whatever, or a terrorist act, how are you going to have water? How are you going to have food to eat, because the grocery stores are going to be out of food? Those type of things are the prepper side. So at those type of shows, there's water filter systems, which we sell one called ProPure, they're learning how to start fires without matches, and just all kinds of things. The medical issue. Sometimes, you know, people, if you get fall down, break a leg and can't get into a hospital or emergency room, or you've got a bad cut, you know, how are you going to fix that on site? You know, those are the type of things that people are constantly learning, how to store food, long-term storage, in the sense of, you know, how do you just stick, you know, because your freezer is going to be out, your electricity's out, your freezers and fridges are going to be out. So how are you going to have long-term food to eat? So, I mean, it's all types of different things, but it's a wide, wide range. And, you know, if you're concerned about that and with the way things are going in the world these days, you know, with so many different things could happen, it's good to be prepared and have some of these basic things taken care of.
Yeah. I'm glad I talked to the rock star millennials that are going to bring us world peace and are doing their best to get us back on track in this world, because I'm definitely not a doomsdayer. I'm definitely an optimist and just believe that the good's going to rule out. So, but on the flip side, even, I mean, Mike and I, you know, we met because we lived off the grid for the first 6 years we were together. And I don't know how long he lived here without me. And, you know, I've done the whole, like, we still use our outhouse. People laugh, but I'm like, you know, I have a bathroom. If I wanted to use the bathroom, I'd go in there. But I just, you know, I don't know. It's just you get used to it. And it's just, you know. And the only reason we really put power in is because right when we were drilling a well, or, well, my husband actually dug a shallow well with his backhoe. My neighbor brought in power, and it went dropped from $10,000 to bring the power into $2,000, and we just went that way. And we've been like, my mom always laughs because it was 1999. So we went into 2000 and, like, had no power, no running water, nothing, to living, you know, cell phones and computers. And I was working at this printer, so I got my first iMac, and we got our cell phones all, like, when we got power all at the same time. It was pretty funny. But so I kind of know, you know, some things about that. I always tell people I would do it again in a heartbeat, get rid of my bills, only if I had water on my property and I had to have, like, a propane fridge. I can't like, living out of a cooler did not work for me. Now, we're working on building a root cellar. And I don't know what you do for the propane. I'm ready to throw my propane stove out because we keep running out of propane. And I'm like, all right, the electricity has not gone out since we put it in, what, 17 years ago? So, like, let's go back to the – let's hook it up like the electric fridge. But my listeners always tell me, don't interrupt your guests. Let them talk. So back to you.
Oh, well, that's fine. I love hearing people's stories. You know, like I was talking about, you know, I'm not a doom and gloomer myself either. I'm more optimistic. You know, we're in God's control and God's hand, so I'm not worried about it. But at the same time, you know, God told Noah and he told Joseph, you know, to prepare. So there's nothing wrong with having preparedness things on hand just for those times when, you know, maybe you do get a storm that hits and knocks you out, electricity or snow. And, you know, I know there's a lot of people down south when they have those hurricanes hit, they wish, I would know they wish they had some stuff. So, yeah, definitely don't do a doom and gloom per se, but, you know, but be prepared because that's very important because your family's livelihood depends on it.
And the storms are getting worse, and we haven't done anything in the United States to improve our grid. Like, you know, and, like, as it gets hotter, people think, oh, what's 1 degree? But it is a big thing. And especially, you know, what's the big one that's going to throw people off is all those air conditioners going on can kill the grid. So I definitely hear you there. And it is, like, the couple of times, like, the power does go out, I'm like, oh, yeah, how did we live like this before? Because, you know, we used to have our water systems set up and different things, and we're not really set up for that anymore. But anyway, let's get on to a positive note. Tell us about something that grew well this year.
Well, we had a rough year here in Missouri this year. I mean, last couple of years have been tough for us, but due to animal activity, pests, and, you know, the critters down here, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's one of those things that they know something weather-wise that's coming, but they've just been hitting us with the birds and the gophers and the deer and the groundhogs, squirrels. Everything that's possible here in Missouri has been attacking our stuff. But one of the things that grew well this year for us has been our Japanese long cucumbers, our winter squash, and our zucchinis did well early before the bugs hit them. So, yeah, those are the type of things that we've thoroughly enjoyed, and I'm really looking forward to some winter squash here when it gets ready.
Cool. Got any tips for growing, I don't know, cucumbers or squash or anything for listeners?
Well, you know, of course, the best thing for growing any type of thing in your garden is a well-rounded fertilizer program, whether you're using natural compost or, you know, some of the synthetic stuff, whichever. But you know, that fertilizer element is key. And anytime you, if you do multiple plantings in an area through the year, if you're able to do that, you know, re-fertilize after you've harvested that first batch, definitely every time. But the biggest thing is trace minerals. You know, everybody does the big three, you know, the NPKs, but the trace minerals are what's key to getting the flavors and the health health in your plants and the production. You know, the things like sulfur, boron, manganese, calcium, you know, those type of things. There's a wide list of trace minerals, and you need to get a good source of that in there, and you'll see a dramatic difference. And believe it or not, if your plants are healthy from all the trace minerals, they'll be less susceptible to bug problems and disease problems. You know, the bugs hit the weakest plants, you know, survival of the fittest. So if your plants are the fittest, they'll fight off the bugs and stuff a lot of times just naturally. So that's a definite plus, is the fertilize. Make sure your soil's nice and rich every year. Don't just try to skimp by. Always put that extra stuff back in it.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad I asked you that extra question. So how do you know? Do you do a soil test? How do people know what they need or what to add?
Man, that's a good question. You know, they have the little soil test that you can buy that'll give you a kind of a basic fertilizer elements in your garden. But to get a really good test, take a sample and take it to your local conservation agency, and you know, they usually do a test. I don't, here in Missouri, some places do it for free. Sometimes they charge you 20 or 25 bucks. You know, it depends on the state and the agency. But take it, and they'll give you a well balanced. They'll show you what you're missing on the big three or over on the big three, but they'll also give you that, you know, the trace mineral side of things that you may be lacking or over on. And that's well worth the money spent for that. And like I've told people at shows and stuff, don't just take one sample in the middle of your garden. You know, take multiple samples, because it does depend on, you know, what's in your garden soil all around. What you plant in one area may be totally rich in nitrogen, but just a few feet away may be totally, you know, low. So take multiple samples if you can, and that'll give you a well-rounded version of what you need in your garden.
You know, that has been recommended, to take soil samples, and we've never done it, but you're really pointing out, and like, was it G. Martin Fortier, or I can't remember if it was Todd Luzio, I went and saw at a workshop, but they talked about like boron or gypsum, which is like what's in drywall or something. Like those can be like key things that are missing. Like, was it Elliot Coleman that found out that it was boron that was missing? And I think G. Martin Fortier was talking about it when I interviewed him, but I have been wanting to do that with Mike. But now, so you say take these different, but you're not making like 10 different samples. You just put all those different parts of dirt into the one container when you take it in?
Well, that would be something you'd have to ask your conservation, you know, department that you take your sample to, is how they would want it. You know, if you're doing a huge garden, you know, and you're taking samples from it, you know, say it's 30 by 50, 30 feet by 50 feet. You know, you'd want to do more than one sample just out of the center. But if you're just doing a small backyard garden, you know, you know, 10 by 10 or 10 by 20 or something like that, you know, you could probably get by with maybe one or two. And depending on what they charge you, you know, if it's free, you know, like I said, some of the places do that. You know, it won't cost you that much. But, you know, if you have a huge garden, you're doing 10 samples and they're charging you 20 bucks a prop, you know, that gets kind of expensive. So, it's just really going to depend on what they recommend for you to do state to state.
Well, that's awesome, because like I had only heard about places where you mailed it in. So I'm going to check with our conservation service, because that's been kind of part of my, like, why haven't I done it? Because, you know, you got to get the jar and then you got to go to the post office and you got to do that. And I know, like when you say, like, is that the extension office? Like, because they're right in town.
Yeah,
I could just bring it right in there. Maybe they will do it for free.
Yeah, the extension office or agency.
Awesome. Well, you are just dropping, I call them golden seeds. I know other podcasters call them golden nuggets, so I call them golden seeds on my show. And like, cool. You know, listeners are going to love this. All right. So is there something you're going to do different next year? Something you're excited to try maybe that's new that you haven't done before?
Oh, this year has been a year, like I said, with the disappointments of pests and rodents and animals and stuff. We'll probably try to do more of an isolation type thing, you know, put fences around some of our garden areas that we want to protect. It's been hard for us to stay on top of it, the garden, you know, in the sense of just regular maintenance of weeding and, you know, watering, that type of things, due to scheduling and the business itself and traveling. So there'll be some, we'll have to either condense down and, you know, make it more applicable to take care of on a smaller basis, or to, you know, put more fencing up to keep the bookers out. But that's probably going to be the biggest thing that we do different. We'll probably just keep plugging away with our methods and stuff at this point, but definitely try to do the prevention of the destruction and stuff. And fertilize more. We'll definitely stay on top of the fertilization more. And that's one other thing I could tell your listeners, is that I tell you a product that works super to supply a lot of the trace minerals, and it's very easy. It's a Neptune's Harvest Fish Emulsion Spray. And it's just chopped up fish and seaweed put in a liquid form. It's concentrated, so you mix 1 ounce per gallon, and you spray that on your garden, you know, every 2 or 3 weeks. And that's an easy way to get those trace minerals in, and it's a low fertilizer of the big three. So, and it, we've seen results of that. You spray that on onion sprouts and you can almost see them grow overnight, or garlic or any of that family. It's amazing stuff. It really is good. So that's a good fertilizer I'd recommend.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that with us. Cause I meant to ask that, where do you find, like when you find out you're missing boron or you're missing CalMag or you're missing something, where do you? So that's a great Neptune Harvest Fish.
Fish and seaweed spray. They have all kinds of products, but that's what, that's the one that we use, and I'm sure all their products are good. And they use good quality ingredients. You know, there's a lot of fish sprays out there, but Neptune's Harvest is a cold process. They don't heat it up, so it keeps all the good minerals and stuff in it. So, like I said, I highly recommend that product.
Excellent. You know, the other thing I was going to mention is, like, we're having an incredible problem with pests and rodents, and like there is squirrel, I call it one squirrel, but Mike's like there's really 8 of them out there, but they eat like all of our apples. They went and pooped on my broccoli. I can't even believe it. I'm just like disgusted. I'm like, they got Mike's mini farm and he finally grew me like more broccoli than ever. Well, first the deer snuck in at the beginning of the year and chopped down his broccoli plants, and then they finally grew back, and we go out to harvest 5 heads the other day and there's squirrel poop all over them. I'm just so devastated. And they take 2 bites and take off and go to the next one and the next one. And I was just like, we've never had that problem before.
Well, let me ask this. Are you having any type of drought right now?
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Are you? We're in like the middle of fire season. I mean, we're like right there, like evacuation. Okay. I'm sitting here. I've been thinking all week, like, we could lose Mike's garden. We could lose all the food that I've been freezing and all our, you know, the first thing I packed up were his pickled beets, because the night the evacuation notices went out, we didn't actually get evacuated, but I have friends that are a mile away from me that were woke up at 1:30 in the morning and had to go. They just got let back in last night. But
Well, the reason I asked that,
big drought here.
Be safe on that area for sure. The reason I asked that is a lot of times squirrels, this is something I learned from, when, again, talking with some old timers, when the weather gets dry, they're looking for a food source too, of course, but they're also looking for a water source. And the squirrels specifically will attack your garden and eat your, like you said, the fruits, the tomatoes, your melons, you know, anything that has
apples.
A lot of more
They've
moisture
eaten,
in
like,
it.
Two apple trees.
And so they will attack that. One way that will help prevent that from, is give them a water source. Put some water out there for them to drink, you know, in some type of, you know, shallow container or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in an area where you see a lot of their activity, and if they fill up on water, sometimes they'll leave your stuff alone. So that is one old timer's tip that you can possibly use to combat it and try it. Now, deer are, man, they're a totally different deal. But the thing with them is you want to mess with their head. They're a smell-orientated animal, so you want to mix up the scents. And if you have an area, if your garden smells really good, they're going to come and eat it. So you want to do something around the perimeter to mess that smell up. You know, you can use predator urines. You can use blood meal, garlic sprays, just all types of those type of things. Some people even use human hair, you know, sprinkle around, Irish Spring soap, those type of things. And mix those up every week, switch it up to your perimeter mix. So you're not using the same thing over and over. And because they get used to it after a while and they go, oh, that's, I smell human hair. No big deal. Nothing's changed. And they'll stay in your garden area. But if you mix it up, mix it up, then they will tend to go somewhere else that's less environmentally changing, if you understand what I mean there. So yeah, that's a way to get rid of deer. And now, of course, you know, the old fashioned way, my family, my son-in-law is an extreme hunter. You know, the best way is a good, you know, rifle, and I'll take care of them. But that, some people don't go for that. So, but a fence and mix up the smells around your garden will definitely help prevent and deter them some.
Yeah, our place is like kind of like a sanctuary for them compared to my neighbors. We're like, I still had a neighbor 2 days ago shooting. We're like in the middle of the afternoon. We have constant like guns going off around here. And I'm like, it's the middle of fire season. You're not supposed to be shooting a gun after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they're still shooting them off. But anyway, yeah, in Montana, where we are, pretty much all the old timers say you got to have a fence. And that's what we've learned. And just somehow, I don't know, the fence either got left open or like there was a crack in like where Mike had been like, not like his regular gate, but like in another place where he'd like pulled the rototiller out or something. I don't remember what. I wasn't really sure. I wasn't here when it happened, but somehow three deer got in. But I always tell people, like I tell him, I know he's still cursing them for chewing his broccoli and his peppers, but I'm like,
oh yeah,
it's better it happened then. We've been a lot more vigilant about our fences because of that this year, and the gates, and making sure things are closed, because that happened early on in the year then. So, but those are great tips. I haven't heard a lot of those. See, now the thing with the blood meal, what was Mike telling me the other day, that he was worried that the blood meal was going to attract something. It might scare off the deer, but it might attract other predators. And that's what we've had a big problem. Something got our duck and something got Mike's cat. So Mike like actually started taking away the water outside. We have
there's
chicken and the rooster water up, and like he hasn't been like, usually we used to have a pool for the duck and a pool for, and like, so we kind of been like trying not to. So, but that might, maybe we'll do something for the squirrels. That's a great tip.
Yeah, there's pluses and minuses. Yeah, pluses and minuses to, you know, if you do, you get one thing taken care of, there's usually something else that'll move in there. But, you know, that's just the process. That's the, nobody said gardening was easy. That's for sure.
Yeah, but those are great tips. I think listeners are going to love that. You talked about a lot of different things that people haven't heard about. So tell us about something that didn't work so well this season. What didn't go the way you thought it was going to?
Well, that, like I said earlier, the animals and the pests have been the biggest scourge for us the past 2 years. Last year, we had a groundhog. I don't know, for some reason, he was the most sneakiest thing, and we just couldn't get rid of him. And he finally moved on after he ate our garden up. But that's been the biggest thing this year, is the that didn't work as well as most things, is the most years, is that the pests have been worse the last 2 years. Not just bugs, you know, just the animals too. When we never used to have animal problems, it's just been kind of weird the last 2 years that they've been on a mission to kind of destroy our gardens, it seems like. But other than that, you know, actually the growing things did pretty well this year. We had a decent season in the sense of weather. Pretty much just been the bugs and the animals has been our biggest problem.
Okay. Yeah, we think it was a badger maybe that got the duck and then the cat. So I don't know. So that's why he was hoping it would move away, if there's, because we're pretty far from the creek, so we're hoping maybe it would move. And like somebody saw a badger down by the creek, so we're hoping he's, if that's what it was, it went back there. I don't know. He's so sad about his cat. Anyway, yep, animals are tough, but I've had a lot of listeners ask, so I think you gave them some tips out there that they'll like.
I was mostly dealing with animals, but on the bug side, since you're an organic grower and your listeners are, for what we use is most of our pesticide controls are essentially diatomaceous earth and neem oil. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with that. We use a neem oil that's 100% neem and not a mixture. You know, there's a lot of the lawn garden centers will sell a neem oil that's 70% and neem and 30% something else. And plus it's a heat processed, which kills all the good stuff of what neem oil actually does. So I recommend highly 100% neem, and it's a cold, make sure it's cold processed. and the food grade diatomaceous earth. The product that I recommend on the neem, and there's a company out in California, I can't think of their name right off the top of my head, but it's their product is called Garden Essentials Neem. And that's the product that we use exclusively, and it's 100% and it's cold processed.
Excellent. Well, that's always the best when you give like a specific brand, because you do get overwhelmed and you get out there and you start looking and you're like, well, which one of these is the best? So before we get to the root of things, we're going to take a moment to thank our sponsors, my good friend, Dacia Daly from Simply Josephine.
It's all about handcrafted soaps and apron love here at Simply Josephine. Located in Montana's beautiful Tobacco Valley, I create everything from my home studio. Currently, I offer 6 different kinds of handmade soaps, 3 different salves, using wildcrafted plant medicine from right here in our beautiful valley. In addition to my body care products, I also make several styles of aprons. Everything is available at simplyjosephine.com. We want to share a little love with the Organic Gardener Podcast listeners. We're offering 15% off. Use code OGP15 at checkout. Thanks and have a beautiful day. SimplyJosephine.com.
Do you love to listen to audio as much as I do? Have you ever tried an audiobook? As a fan of this podcast, you must already enjoy listening to stories just like I do. Well, the Organic Gardener Podcast has teamed up with Audible to offer you a free audiobook. Just go to www.organicgardenerpodcast.com/book or just type book into the search bar at theorganicgardenerpodcast.com and you can get entered to get listening to your first audiobook today. Okay, so this is where I get to this part of the show where I call getting to the root of things. And these are kind of little faster, quicker questions. But
okay.
What's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there something you have to force yourself to get out there and do?
Hands down, weeding. Any type of weeding I absolutely despise. But we have a product that we use. It's called Rogue Hoe. It's a scuffle hoe, and it's a tremendous tool. Tremendous tool to use on the for weeding and planting, and just they have a wonderful line of tools. But that's what I use when I do weed.
Who is Scuffle the brand?
The actual brand is called Rogue Hoe, R-O-G-U-E Hoe. Rogue, the Scuffle is just the type of variety. I mean, they've got garden hoes, they've got firefighting tools. I mean, they tremendous, and they're just down the road from a super family that is a distributor in our area. We sell them, of course, through our website, but we don't carry the varieties of all that they carry. But it's a wonderful product. All they make it, and since your listeners like the natural stuff, they recycle. It's made out of all recycled parts. The metal is made out of old farm implements. It's 1/4 inch thick. It's not the thin blades that you see in the stores. And the handles are solid hardwood handles. I mean, they're just a tremendous tool. In 15 years, they've never had to replace one. They're tremendous quality. But yeah, check that out, Rogue Hoe for sure.
I'm thinking that's where I heard you. I interviewed this woman from, what is her name? Her blog is called, I think, Journey with Jill. And I just was doing
Jill
the
Sanders?
I think
was it Jill Sanders?
No. I think her last name is McSheehy. And she also has a podcast. And she was talking about she met you at the garden show and you talked her into getting this, or you were not talked her into, but you were showing her the Rogue Hoe, Scuffle Hoe. Because I remember her, she sent me an actual video of her using it. She's got a YouTube video of her using it. So I guess I didn't pick up that Rogue is the company.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, yes. Anybody that uses it will never go back to old style hoe. I can almost guarantee it. You scrape it. It's a triangle, and it's sharpened on all three sides. And you kind of go back and forth, and you scuffle it back and forth, and it takes the weeds down. And then when you've got your ground worked and tilled up and ready to use, flip it over and use the point as a furrow maker for your seeds. I mean, it is a slicker and hot butter. You know, it's just wonderful tool to use.
Awesome. For all aspects. I love that. Well, cool. And, you know, weeding definitely comes in as one of the activities people don't like. Or even if they do like some weeding, I think all of us agree that when we miss a few days or you have that weather where, like, I was talking to this one guy in the Olympic Peninsula. He's like, you can weed and the next day it's all grown again. You know, like when it just gets so overwhelming, that's where this thing is going to come in perfect. So... okay, so on the flip side, what is your favorite activity to do in the garden?
Hands down, snack on cherry tomatoes. We have a variety called Matt's Wild Cherry. It's about the size of a dime. Oh, man, it is garden candy. It's sweet, and you hardly ever make them inside. They make it inside to eat it. That's my favorite activity, is eating cherry tomatoes.
Before we go further, tell us about your seed store. Like, some people... I have a lot of new listeners. My show is growing. And then when this goes, actually starting this Monday, Jill's interview is the first one I'm going to start being on Progressive Radio Network out of New York. Tell people, if they're new listeners to gardening, you know, what's an heirloom seed? And then tell us about your business, your seed store.
Okay. The name of our company is called White Harvest Seed Company. We're strictly an heirloom seed company, and what that means for people that maybe never heard of that, there's three types of seeds out there in the world: heirlooms, hybrids, and genetically modified, the GMOs. We strictly just sell the heirlooms. They're the seeds that if you grow them and you grow them properly and isolate them properly, which is fairly easy to do, you can grow your seed, save the seed, and year after year after year, it will constantly be that variety of seed. Whereas a hybrid, you know, they take one variety of a tomato and another variety of tomato and they cross it to get some benefit, whether it's bug resistance or, you know, shelf life or whatever. But if you take the seed from a hybrid and try to save it and grow it the next year, it will do either two things. It will either be sterile and not produce anything, or it will produce a plant that reverts back to one of its granddaddy crosses. The best way to explain it. So it's not true to type. Whereas an heirloom, if you grow, let's say, a beefsteak heirloom tomato, and you save the seed from it and you do it all, everything proper, you say that it's going to be a beefsteak tomato year after year after year. So that's the difference between heirlooms. And, of course, GMOs, the genetics, are seeds where they've taken the genetics of a seed and crossed it with something like corn. It's the most popular, where they cross it with a Roundup to be Roundup resistant in pesticide or herbicide, I'm sorry. And, of course, that's totally not natural, and it never reproduces true to type. So that's really the main difference. So the heirlooms also are tended to be noted to have better tastes, and just the old-fashioned flavors that our grandparents fell in love with. But our company is located in the Ozarks of Missouri. We're just a mom and pop store. We're internet, mail order, and phone. But our website, like I mentioned earlier, is whiteharvestseed.com. Check it out. And all our information there, how we got our name and about us, ourselves. You can even see a picture of our family so you can see what we look like, just how we hear us. We'd be glad, and call us anytime. We're here to help people. We're not just a business. We like to, people that call with a question about things, just like what you're asking today. We'd be glad to talk to you and help you in any way we can.
Awesome. All right. Well, that explained a lot. Like, I've asked about heirloom seeds and, like, I don't always get it, but, like, the part that you explained about, like, it'll revert back to its old thing, that really made a lot of sense and just good to know. And I'm looking at your website. You guys have all sorts of cool things on there: antiques, garden tools, fertilizers, accessories, books, knives, cutlery. Cool. And we said it was,
whiteharvestseed.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I always like to repeat it because people are listening. It's going to stick it in their head. Okay. What's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Well, I mentioned a little bit of it earlier, but that fertilizer thing, you know, for years I was, you know, I did the fertilizer of the NPK, you know, the big three,
right. And,
you know, had good results. But some of the best advice I had, and it was news to me when I first heard it, was the trace mineral side of things. And, you know, adding those trace elements, I have seen the difference in the production, in the quality of the plants. And so that is probably, you know, and to replenish frequently. Each year, definitely add fertilizer elements to your gardens for sure, in compost or whatever. That was probably the biggest thing that I've learned through the years and talking. You know, everybody, you know, the old timers would always just throw some cow manure out there and that was about it. And they did pretty well with that. But I think you'll find once you really focus on the trace mineral side of things, you'll see a difference. You really will.
Yep. A lot of people have said that. So now how big is your guys' place?
Well, we have 30 acres that we live on. Our gardens, that we use, one of them is probably 30 by 100, and then the one by our house is, 50 by 50, ballpark, somewhere in that area. And we hope to expand that in the sense of expand it by condensing it to be more, because it's kind of more efficient. That's the right word. My wife just yelled at me, efficient. So instead of we're not running like a chickens with their heads cut off around here. But yeah, be more efficient growers next year.
Okay, so in the 30 by 100 bed, like, are you growing seeds there since you're cecum? Is that what's growing there?
Well, that's a very good question. We grow some of the seeds that we sell here at our location. We kind of specialize the things here, the more of the rarer things. Like just for example, one of the beans that we sell is called Tar Heel Bean. And we're one of probably maybe two companies or people in the United States that sell that. And we grow that here in our place. But like I said earlier on the heirlooms, you have to have isolation distances between things. Just for example, if you're trying to grow, let's say cucumbers, because that's another one that we grow here, this Japanese long cucumbers. If you have a cucumber, two different cucumbers within a quarter of a mile of each other, and since they are insect pollinated, they will most likely have a cross. So you can't sell true to type seed that way. So we are very selective of what we grow here at our locations. And then we partner with other growers throughout the parts of the United States that grow seed for us according to our specs. And then we test that seed when it comes in, and you know, germination rates have to be good. And then we buy that seed from them. And then we also deal with a few companies that are wholesale seed companies that I have personally talked to the upper managements of them, and you know, and ask them the most important question for us and most of our customers is the GMO thing. You know, are you genetically modified tied to any genetically modified companies at all, like Monsanto or DuPont or Simonies or those type of things, even foreign companies that do that? And if they give me the right answer, which of course is no, then we deal with them. And at the present time, I think we deal with maybe 4 or 5 wholesale seed companies, and 3 or 4 of those are certified organic. So our selection of seed is very well rounded, and at the same time I'm very, very confident that it's genetically modified exempt, and we germinate test every 10 months so we know the status of all our seeds on a regular basis, you know, because there's nothing more frustrating than order seed and get it in and it not grow. And we've had that happen to us from other seed companies, you know, even when back before we started our own company. And, you know, you're entrusting your good money with us, and we want to give you a good product, so we do everything we can to give you that.
Not only your good money, but it's your time as well, because if you put seeds in the ground and they don't germinate, like especially like in where we are and a lot of our seeds, you know, you've only got that one window. And if you miss that window and things are, you know, I mean, you know, nature's nature, but, you know, there's nothing worse than like having seeds that don't germinate. So a lot of my listeners are millennials who have quite a bit of gardening experience and are looking to either become a market farmer or do something. Like if somebody was interested in becoming a seed farmer, like how would they become, you know, how would they hook up with, like, what would you tell them? Like if they wanted to sell you some seeds, what would you tell them to do to start?
Another great question. That's one of the things, you know, we're open to, you know, different parts of the country, you know, have different growing zones and climates and things. So it is something to consider. If they wanted to possibly look into being a seed grower for us, they would just have to contact us. And then, of course, we'd send them all the proper information and talk to them a little bit, you know, what's their growing practices and that type of thing. Because we don't like, you know, as much as possible, we don't like using any seed that's been grown with gobs and gobs of pesticide and herbicides on them. We usually, we try not to even have anybody that has that. But just have them contact us would be the easiest. Either call us or send us an email. Our email is very simple, grow@whiteharvestseed.com. And our phone number is 866-424-3185. And that'd be the best thing I could do. And there is, you know, it's not a big money maker in a sense, but, you know, it's good. It's a good additional, you know, in the sense, if depending on how big of items or seeds you want to grow, quantity, you know, and what we can also buy. You know, just because you grow 100 pounds doesn't mean we're going to buy 100 pounds from you, just for that example. So, I mean, it boils down to different things of what is what we need to fill our inventory. But for people that want to grow vegetables, I tell you what, the local farmers markets, man, they're ripe in the sense of there is a definite need. People are looking for that quality, organically grown, fresh produce. When we have a lot of Amish growers around us here, and they, you know, they do it all the time, and they're constantly sitting on the weekends, you know, at the farmers markets, and their stuff looks pretty nice. It's pretty tasty.
Excellent. But I want to back up a step further. So,
sure.
Is there anything that you do when you grow vegetables for seed different than growing vegetables to eat? Because I know Mike's got these carrots that he let go to seed, and like their flowers have been blooming, and like, is there a different process about how you harvest?
Man, you're asking some really good questions. That question has multi answers to it. And let me say it to you and try to say it as quickly and easily as possible. All vegetables have their own mannerisms, their own techniques that you have to grow them with. And the biggest thing you have to learn, there's a couple different things. You have to learn how they're pollinated. Are they wind, insect, or self-pollinators? And are they, how far apart you can have things grow of the same species to have safe, true-to-type seed. So that's probably the biggest thing. If you're, like, for example, corn is a wind-pollinated vegetable. And if you have corn growing, say you have your patch growing, and you have corn, somebody else growing any type of corn within 2 to 3 miles of you, you're most likely going to get a cross, especially if you're downwind and they tassel at the same time. So your product this year is going to make what you grew, but if you save the seed from it, whatever it crossed with, cross-pollinated with, then you're going to have an issue next year. And if it cross-pollinated with a GMO variety, then you have that whole ball of wax to enter in. Going back to your example of carrots, do you have a lot of people call it a weed, but Queen Anne's lace growing around you there? The little tall flower with a white, about the size of a half a dollar, kind of flat-looking flower, but it's all white. It's pretty, but it's a tall, and a lot of people consider it a weed. That is in the same family as a carrot. So if you have Queen Anne's lace going to seed or flowering at the same time your carrot is going to cross with that Queen Anne's lace. So the biggest thing you have to worry about as a seed grower is learning how to keep heirlooms, especially, or only, because that's what you're growing them for to sell, is how you're going to keep things from cross-pollinating. The rough rule of thumb is you got to have a quarter mile separation from anything of like variety vegetable. And some people say, well, how can that be done then? Well, there's techniques, and there's bagging, and there's succession planting, and those type of things that fit into that, which we don't have time to go into now. But it can be done, but you got to learn the proper procedures, and especially for us, as say you wanted to grow for us some carrots out there, carrot seed. Two things, that takes 2 years to get generally carrot seed from it. But the point of the matter is, I talked to you about, okay, do you have Queen Anne's lace? You know, how are you going to keep it from being cross-pollinated, and so on and so on. But it's just talks, you know, figuring out the details and then following through properly.
I love all of this. And I think, like, you know, one thing that's spinning in my head, and so I would think it's spinning in other people's heads, is like, if you haven't got your property yet, you really want, you're going to want to like keep this in the back of your mind when you get your property. Where are you putting your property? How close to other farms are you? Right?
Sure. Sure. If you're going to, if your mindset is you're going to, you want to grow your own seed, not just for selling, but for yourself, you know, to have a food source. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. And learn how to do it so that you will have, because there'd be something, it'd be most frustrating if, say, you saved your carrot seed this year and it had crossed and you grew it in and planted it next year and it's going to look like a carrot pretty much all season until it gets to start forming its fruit. You know, it's going to turn into something that's going to be a weird Queen Anne's lace and carrot cross, and it's not going to be a food source for you when you were thinking, man, I spent, you know, 3 months planting this and growing this, and now it does nothing there. So yeah, learning those techniques are very important. And what I tell folks at shows and seminars that I teach is get that resource, and a resource, but you know, the internet's live right now, but and full of information, but get a resource that you can have in your hand. And a book that's out there, there's two of them that I highly recommend. One of them is called The Complete Guide to Saving Seed, and then one called Seed to Seed. Either one of those two is going to be outstanding. The first one, The Complete Guide, just doesn't talk about vegetables, so it talks about herbs and flowers and trees and fruits and berries and all those type of things, which, you know, herbs are very important. You know, there's a lot of health pluses in a lot of the herbs. You can grow your own medicine cabinet, you know, right in your backyard. So that book is the one we sell, but that book, get it. If you go to Amazon, go to your library, wherever, but get that one so that you can have that as a resource, because it is a tremendous book.
I love that. And I just interviewed a woman who grew herbs for medicine and herb for, you know, both culinary, but also for medicinal. She had a beautiful garden just right in San Francisco. So listeners, you know, that can be an urban farming thing too.
Sure,
I love
sure.
herbs. That's like one of the things. I like to grow the flowers and the herbs and let Mike stick to the vegetables. Although I do like to grow lettuce.
Yeah.
So I guess, is your favorite tool your scuffle hole? I usually like to ask, like, if you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
That would be the one of gardening, for gardening stuff, definitely. Yeah, for the Rogue hoe. And like I said, they have so many different varieties of hoes. I would try to grab as many of mine as I could of that series.
Okay, so for non-gardening stuff, what's your favorite tool?
Oh, wow.
Well, probably here. I was like, what's he thinking about? Yeah. His chainsaw? Mike's chainsaw is like sitting at the end of the pickup waiting to be loaded.
That's what I was going to say. Here in the Ozarks, you know, we have some pretty tough winters. So it would probably be a chainsaw, you know, to make sure we were able to, you know, be able to cut firewood a lot easier than a hatchet. You know, you can do it that way. But, you know, to be with the chainsaw would be probably the second biggest tool that I would lean for.
Okay. Do you have a favorite recipe you like to either cook or eat from the garden?
Well, besides the fresh stuff, I tell you what, we fried zucchini. That is me and my wife's nemesis. We can sit and pig out on that all day. We did a recipe once that you cut the zucchini in finger, like French fries, instead of the
in long strips?
Round. Yeah. Just do long, long, thin strips. We like ours crunchy. And then, of course, batter it nicely, double time, and milk and flour or Bisquick or whatever, tempura batter, whatever you have. And then have a good batch of, a good bowl of ranch dipping sauce to dip it in. And that's our biggest, that's our favorite recipe. Besides sweet corn, you know, sweet corn's awesome too. But fried zucchini.
Cool. I love that. What's your favorite internet resource?
Well, I got a couple. I mean, there's a bunch of them out there. I know one that is a lot of people recommend, and we've used it some. It's Dave's Garden. There's also one that is called Folia, F-O-L-I-A. That's a very popular one and very nice one. And then on the herbal side, there's some one called the Herbal Resource and Herbal Encyclopedia. Those two are two of the internet, or the four internet sources that we use a lot of, but And not to give any self promotion here, but we have some, you know, information on our website, you know, under resources that tie into a bunch of links of other websites, other friends of ours, businesses that we highly recommend. So that's something that would be another thing for folks to look at.
All right. Maybe we'll see the Organic Gardener podcast on that resource page one of these.
Sure, sure. Okay. I'm not the IT expert of this family, but I'll talk to my daughter and son-in-law and we'll see what we can do on that.
All right, cool. All right. Well, were there any other books that you wanted to mention? You mentioned those two seed-saving books. Did you have anything else that you wanted to, if not?
There's another book. It's probably one of my number one resources. It's called The Vegetable Gardener's Bible. And just like it, or just like the complete seed saving book, it has in its back, the back third of it, in the same way it was the seed saving book, is that the people have broken down each individual variety, beans or corn or Greek oregano or whatever you're wanting to look up. And they've broken down each vegetable and each product to tell you what it needs specifically, water, fertilizer, characteristics of it, when to plant it, temperature, soil temperatures, and all that type of stuff. And that's what I love about those books. So if you have a specific question, you don't have to know, a book that has everything on every product per se for every garden, because you're not going to grow everything. You're going to grow what you want to grow for your own uses. And this book, you can specialize that down. Those two are the most outstanding books that we have in my recommendation for those topics.
Cool. So how about some business advice if somebody wanted to start their own general store or start going to become a speaker or growing seeds or whatever? Like, do you have any business advice for these young entrepreneurs that listen to the show?
Wow. Well, realize it's not simple. It's going to take your time. It's going to take your effort. You're going to have to educate yourself. And, gardening is such a wide, wide open topic that you may think you're an expert, but you are not. There are so many different things you have to learn to be well-rounded and to have success. And every year is different. This year may be the perfect growing season and no bugs and everything goes great. Next year you may have a drought. Next year after that you may have a rainy season. So it constantly changes. So you have to educate yourself to how to adjust to that. And on that side, the starting the business side, just do your due diligence. It's going to take effort. It's going to take resources and it's going to take your time. But the rewards are so much rewarding in the sense, you get to be your own boss a lot, even though I have my other boss here. She's here. But the point of the matter is it's something you can do. It's not limited to, necessarily to rich people or only, college education folks, because that's me. I'm not, I've had to learn and I'm still learning. And I always hate being, when I go to some shows, someone will introduce me as an expert and I always cringe because I'm not an expert. I learn stuff every year from different people that help me be more successful year after year.
Well, the guy who's taught me how to podcast, John Lee Dumas, went to law school for one semester. And the one thing he always tells us, an expert in a courtroom is really just somebody who knows more than everybody else in the courtroom on that specific topic. So you probably are the expert in that room at the time, a lot of the time. So, cool. I think those are great tips for people. So ready for my final question?
Sure.
Okay.
How about it?
So if there's one change you, Mike, would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the environment, either locally, nationally, or on a global scale?
Well, not to be too political in a sense, but, from our point of view here as a gardener and an heirloom seed company, the GMO aspect, the genetically modified thing, is one of those things that's huge out there. There's so many, and we can't get into it today, but, there's so many negatives about that, just for the human health part of it. There's so many terrible results of how it's affecting us on a health basis. So on that side, on the growing and the gardening side, I'd say that what I'd like to see more, and I've seen a lot more of it over the past few years, is this idea of seed saving and organizing a seed bank in your local area, with having a group of people come together and to be able to save, you know, grow their seed and grow it properly, like we talked about earlier, and be able to pass that on, keep some back, and give it to your neighbor. Your neighbor grows something else, you know, and give it back to you, and vice versa, and have a group of people organize that so that, you know, communities will be able to help each other in times to come. You know, just and to be honest with you, on back to the, you know, I'm not a big government fan, but the point of the government, just a few years ago, there were some seed saving communities that were doing that. They were doing community seed banks, and the government went in and shut them down, calling them terrorist organizations. You know, that type of stuff needs to be done away with. You know, as human beings and as, you know, citizens, you know, and we need to be able to grow what we want to grow on our own farms and, you know, to use it whatever way we see fit to help someone else. So that's probably the biggest things in a short amount of time.
Cool. I love that. And our, some of the people in our community, Robin Kelson and Pam Grury, some people that I've interviewed that live close to me, did a partnership with our local library. And so they kind of created just exactly what you're talking about, a seed library, and got the library on board. So cool. I love that.
Have them contact us at some point before they have their next seed swap, and we should be able to donate some seed to them. You know, remind me and however they contact me, you know, they're through you. And we will give them some, you know, seed to pass on that, availability.
Excellent. Well, I know the seed swap is probably next April, because we've done the first year, we 1,500 people showed up. They were expecting 350.
Wow.
They had 500 copies. Wow. I was at the front door, and it started at 10, and the flyers were gone before 10 o'clock. And 1,500
wow,
people
awesome.
Went through the door, and then this year 1,900 people went through the door, and it's just growing, and people are definitely interested. And so I will definitely let them know. That would be great if we could get some seeds from over there, and maybe
sure.
we can even, you know, send some your way. All right. Well, just the last thing, not that you haven't inspired people and taught us a ton, but do you just have like a little inspirational tip or quote to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Sure. You know, like I said earlier, the Lord led us to do this business, and we work very hard and try to honor Him and glorify Him in every way. So I have a scripture verse. It's out of Isaiah 61:11, and it reads as this way: "For as the earth bringeth forth her bud, and as the garden causeth the things that are sown in it to spring forth, so the Lord God will cause righteousness and praise to spring forth before all nations." And that's just a great, great verse.
Aw, I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on today and working with my crazy schedule. And I really appreciate
sure.
everything that you've done for us. And just tell listeners one more time your website, how they can connect with you again. And maybe you want to give them because you gave out your phone number again before. I can't quite remember why, but
okay.
go ahead and give them your email, your phone mail, and all that kind of good stuff.
Our website is www, of course, whiteharvestseed.com. Our email is grow@whiteharvestseed.com. And our phone number is 866-424-3185. And it is a toll-free number, so you can call and not cost you a penny.
Okay, wait a minute. 866-424-3185?
That is exactly right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect.
We're on Facebook. It's under White Harvest Seed Company. I think we have a Twitter account. Again, that's my daughter. Yeah, we have Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest. And we actually have some YouTube channels, too, on the Rogue Ho, demonstrating the two different varieties. So, yeah, and the Dustin Miser, which is a diatomaceous earth duster. We have some YouTube videos of that.
Well, thanks so much. You have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Jackie, for having us. Anytime.
Hey, Green Future Growers, don't forget to get your copy of the 2018 Organic Gardener Podcast Garden Journal and Data Keeper, available now at Amazon.com for $16.95. It's a place to keep track of your organic gardening journey, where you can record temperature, weather, recipes, produce that you grew, produce that you bought, and just all your successes and failures and challenges and dreams for the future, all your garden goals. Keep them track of them in one place. 225 pages that will go through each week of the year for the 2018 year. And just there's blank pages in there where you can sketch or write or do anything that will help you record your journey. So don't forget to get a copy of the 2018 Garden Journal and Data Keeper available at Amazon. You can go to the organicgardenerpodcast.com/2018 for the link.
If you know somebody who would benefit from the Organic Gardener podcast, we would just love it if you would share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening, and remember to grow.